just a general, more business-friendly environment. And all, of course, this discussion of the leveling of the playing field as far as international trade is concerned via the tariffs. No one really knew what that was going to look like. People were, I think, again, hopeful that the tariffs would be a net good thing, and they likely actually are a net positive thing. However, the market digested it due to the robustness of the tariffs and of what was proposed. The market had a real difficult time adjusting that and digesting that.
All right. Welcome to Intelligent Investment Live. This is our second quarter Intelligent Investment Newsletter webinar. If you are new to the show, this is the one of four times a year that you will catch me in a tie. I don't know about Matt over there, but I will admit I'm also wearing golf shorts below the screen right now. So I'm not usually so buttoned up, but Garrett Lill here with Matt Dahl, founder and chief man in charge at ARPG. Matt, thank you as always for putting this together, man. Looking forward to it.
Thank you. I don't think I wear a tie much more often than you do, but I do tend to find myself in these things sometimes.
Yeah, I joke about it, and I actually realized I wore one yesterday, so this is actually 2 days in a row, and I'm making the joke that I never wear one. So I guess this is anomalies come in pairs, apparently. So
when it rains, it pours.
That's right. Absolutely. I will wear gym clothes for the next week to make up for this now. So, well, this is always fun to do a buttoned-up version of the Intelligent Investment Show. So we're going to go through your second quarter Intelligent Investment newsletter. And we were talking yesterday about this. You kind of go in chronological order. So if you want to go in chronological order, what a quarter Q1 was for the market.
It was a busy one for sure. There was plenty to discuss there. The market really, it started off with in such a just a go get 'em sanguine fashion. And obviously it turned in a hurry. It turned in a massive, massive hurry. I don't know exactly what investors, investors were hopeful. Obviously after the election, a deregulatory environment, probably some fiscal relief coming in the form of potential additional tax cuts or the tax cuts that are currently in place being made permanent so they don't have to price in tax increases down the road. It's just a general, more business-friendly environment, And of course, this discussion of the leveling of the playing field as far as international trade is concerned via the tariffs. No one really knew what that was going to look like, right? People were, I think, again, hopeful that the tariffs would be, a net good thing. And they likely actually are a net positive thing. However, the market digested it due to the robustness of the tariffs and of what was proposed. The market had a real difficult time, adjusting that and digesting that. Now, that didn't take place until the very beginning of the second quarter. Okay? But, you can see the market really started to price things in starting late February into March. Right. And it did a pretty quick job. It was a waterfall decline, basically from starting on February 20th all the way down. And it actually had its low on April the 8th.
Yeah, it followed a somewhat similar pattern actually to COVID, although obviously very different circumstances. But I think the market peaked in 2020, like the 19th or 22nd of February, and then it bottomed sometime in April there. So it kind of followed the same trajectory this year, maybe not quite to the depths. But, I mean, we did get peak to trough down, 15%?
19.8.
Wow.
Yeah. So, to refer here to the actual newsletter that we're covering, we had similar market action in 2018 and 2020, right? In fact, in 2018, the S&P corrected 10% in like 7 trading days, right? From January 26th to February 8th. And that was triggered by the comments that President Trump made then in 2018 at Davos in regards to tariffs. So it was a tariff-induced correction that was just very, very, very fast. And then, of course, the market fully recovered by August 24th, right? Now, that pales in comparison to what happened 2 years later in COVID, okay? We hit a market all-time high on February 19th, okay? And in just 23 trading days, the S&P came down 34%, okay? That was obviously, you know, one of the most violent corrections, bear markets that we've ever seen. I remember, was it 3 or 4 or 5 days where it actually triggered the circuit breakers, right? Where they stopped trading entirely. Okay. The market would open, it would be down 5 or 6%, and they would shut it off for the 10 minutes or the 5 minutes, open up. There was one day, I think it shut down twice. Okay. And that's just because there was so much aggressive panic selling happening. They needed to kind of calm everything down. So this wasn't that, but here's the thing, only to be fully recovered on August 18th. So the S&P this year, all-time high, February 19th. So this pattern looks a little familiar. We had a, call it a 6-7 week kind of drawdown of just under 20%. And I got to tell you, the technicals got real cute. I mean, it intraday went over 20%. Okay. But it didn't close with a correction over 20% to actually consider itself an official bear market. Okay. So I think there was a lot, I think there was some technicals, algorithms that were kind of buying it right there. And it, for lack of a better word, it saved the bear market label from coming in.
Yeah, it's funny how, you know, we talk on the show once in a while about technicals versus fundamentals and how much stock do you really want to put in the technicals and how much do you really want to rely on them. And the fact of the matter is, whether they are reliable or not, as long as there are people with money who think they are reliable, then guess what? They're going to play out some, they become self-fulfilling to some extent. In other words, if people think 20% is the bottom and everybody has their computers and their algorithms set to buy it down 20%, guess what's going to happen at 20%? You're going to have a lot of buyers, and that's going to make the market go back up. So whether it makes sense or not, if enough people think it makes sense, then it, guess what? It plays out that way.
Well, yeah, I mean, at some point, that's when the fundamentals really start to kick in. I mean, the technicals, of course, are the technicals. But that's where the fundamentals, we've talked about this before, where the fundamentals really start to matter. So if, and we came from a pretty lofty valuation number. February 19th, we were just under 23 times earnings, like 22.7, 22.8 times earnings. That is in like, I think, the top one or two decile ever of the S&P 500. So it's not like we were sitting at some value number of, you know, 13, 14 times earnings. We had room to come down anyway. Okay. That valuation didn't come out of nowhere. It came out of obviously earnings growth and the potential for more earnings growth with a pro-business administration in place, right? So when the market pulled all the way back down to call it just under 19 times earnings, about 18.8 times earnings on April 8th, the market looked at that and said, well, you know, earnings are going to pull back a little bit, but, and from what we're seeing to this day, we've only seen about a 2% revision to earnings estimates for 2025 and 2026 for both S&P and NASDAQ, right? So we have a market that's down 20%. We have earnings revisions now that are actually further down now than they were on April the 8th, okay? And we had a market go from just under 23 times to under 19 times. Well, if you're looking at earnings growth of, you know, 14, 15%, that starts looks pretty attractive, you know? So That's when the panic selling and the emotions are overriding what the actual math says to do, right? So, yeah, would I buy a market at 19 times earnings with 15% earnings growth all day long and twice, you know, every day of the week and twice on Sunday? That's for sure. So the other thing is, I think the market knows, and the equity markets and the bond markets, and we know they're college roommates, right? And the bond market, again, is way ahead of the curve, and the equity markets are cheating off the bond market, okay? So the equity markets, they're recovering now. They've recovered more than 50% of the move, right? I think we're sitting at 5,700 today, 5,687 as I'm looking at it right now. That is one heck of a recovery, okay? And I think that recovery is coming from, obviously, less talk of tariffs, okay? Less talk of the potential of severe crippling tariffs and economically crippling tariffs are going to be somewhat subdued or mitigated. Okay. The other thing I think the equity markets are starting to realize is the bond market is getting ahead of the game here, and it like they're supposed to do. And the equity market's starting to follow the bond market. Okay. And actually, Bessent has been talking about this for the better part of the, you know, a week and a half now, and he's not wrong. Okay. I think he's spot on. If you look at where the 2-year treasury was in 2021 and early 2022, it was significantly higher than policy rate. Okay. The 2-year was, you know, going, you know, 3-4, it went way over 5%. Just when the Fed started increasing interest rates, right? They started increasing their Fed funds rate and they started increasing their policy. Okay. And then what happened? They started increasing rates and they got all the way up to, you know, 5.5%. Okay. So, and then as that started to cool inflation, we started to see the 2-year slowly bleed down now. Now we're looking at the 2-year 3.6% and a Fed funds rate with an upper bound of 4.5%. As I look at it today, the actual spread is it's 4.33 on a 3.6 2-year. Okay. That's a 73 basis point spread between 2-year and policy rate. Now, what's that telling us? That's telling us that now the two year is the bond market's expectation of policy rate. So that's telling us, okay, we think policy rate's going to go to, you know, three and a half, three and three quarter, right? And so back to our initial, what we were talking about very end of last year, beginning of this year, and, you know, people were throwing rotten tomatoes at us. We're sticking with our 3, maybe 4 rate cuts this year, okay? And the bond market is starting to point that direction. So I think the equity markets are looking at the 2-year thinking, okay, well, the 2-year's coming down. That's good. That's really good for real estate. That's good for mortgage rates. Okay. That's going to get the 30-year fixed relationship back into a normal relationship of kind of 1 3/4%. Right now we're sitting at 6.85 with a 10-year of, well, actually popped up today as 4.3, but it had been about 4.2 on about 7. So we were looking at about 275 basis points. So it's about a full percent or so above its historical relationship. But that has a lot more to do with the shorter end of the curve, which we talked about before. That has to come down in order for those mortgage rates to come down. So seeing that the short end of the curve is coming down and seeing that the bond market's getting ahead of this thing, the bond market is telling the equity markets, we think the Fed's going to cut. We think the Fed's going to cut. Okay. And I think that is obviously good for, you know, your valuation is good for your multiples. Okay. So when do I think they're going to cut? I don't think they're going to cut next week. I don't think they're going to cut next week. Okay. My best guess is there will be a lot of questions coming from during the press conference in regards to comments made by Treasury Secretary Bessent in regards to lowering policy rates and look at what the 2 year, look where the 2 years in comparison to policy rate. And Jay Powell, he will acknowledge that. He absolutely, I believe, will acknowledge that. And the general tone and temperature of the press conference, I think, will lean dovish. There was a gentleman that came on the other day on CNBC, CEO of Texas Capital Bank. Okay. And he said they don't think there's going to be any cuts this year, because the Fed is concerned with inflation more than anything else. And I thought that's I'm really great that we, it was really great that someone of his standing went and on TV and took that position. It's wrong. Okay. It's wrong. But that goes to show you the wide delta that exists in people's belief of where Fed policy rate's going to go and where everything will go in this. Okay. So the Fed said multiple times through the last press conferences that they believe, and through just general communications, through speeches that they give, that yes, they are of course concerned with inflation. However, they don't believe tariffs are a permanent inflationary problem. It is a transitory inflationary problem, but more than anything, it could cool the economy enough especially getting to the labor side, where they are going to have to be very careful with holding policy rate too high for too long. So again, I think we're absolutely going to stick to this, you know, three policy or three rate cuts, plus or minus one. I think it's going to be, I'm leaning toward plus one.
Back in December, January, we had the episode where you talked about inflation, or I'm sorry, tariffs not being as inflationary as people might automatically think they were. So I guess now 4 months later, I guess, what's the Matt Dahl update on how it's actually played out, right? Because you kind of made a, I wouldn't say a bold call, but a counterintuitive you had a counterintuitive view of that. And to me, it kind of sounds like some of that is what you're talking about right now. It kind of sounds like you're describing that in action 4 months later. Am I missing? Economics was never my strong suit, like way back to even college, right? I was good at finance at the micro level, but I was never great at the macro. But that's kind of, it sounds like where you're heading with it a little bit.
Yeah. So when we initially talked about tariffs, we talked about what is a tariff? It's effectively an increase. It's an increase of the price from the government, but it's not an increase in demand. Okay. So you're going to get some level of margin contraction, or you're going to get higher prices, or you're going to get consumer substitution behavior manifestation, right? Which means, and that's obviously delineated in PCE, not CPI. That's where we're going to see, okay, prices went up on apparel on, okay, so we've seen prices on apparel go up X amount, but it didn't go up on the PCE side because people stopped buying the Calvin Kleins, they started buying the Levi's, right? That's where PCE is really important. So if we, you know, looking back to earlier this week, what did we have? We had GDP come in for first quarter. Didn't come in good, but it also came in good, right? Now go choke yourself with your tie, right? So it came in negative 0.3. On a consensus of Bloomberg, I think it was negative 0.2. Okay. And so why did it come in negative 0.3? Imports. So if you look at all of the domestically consumed products that are not produced here versus all of the domestically produced products that are not consumed here, that is net imports, net exports. So there's a net import differential this quarter of minus 5.03%, which is almost double of what it normally is. We had a 41.6% increase in imports this quarter. Why? Tariffs. Of course it was tariffs. Everyone wanted to get as much inventory as they could pre-tariff. So what that did is that skewed that GDP number way, way, way down. But if you look at there's a really great article here. And if you look at the final sales of goods to domestic purchasers, which is kind of a good, just a general sign of demand in the economy, okay? It grew at 3% last quarter. Q4 of 2024 grew at 2.9. So final demand is still there. It's still strong, okay? And it's also manifesting itself in earnings. So earnings are great. We have 70% of the S&P has already reported. 77% are beating estimates by 6%. So those are fine. So we saw the contrarian call was we think tariffs are going to cause not an increase in demand, but an increase in price or a contraction of margin, which won't be good for earnings, of course. So what will likely happen is we'll start to see cooling of demand on the higher end, and we'll start to see, you know, a change of consumer behavior as far as demand is concerned. And that is of a economically accommodative nature from the Fed, not restrictive. Okay. They're going to want to say, okay, if we have less money to spend now as consumers, if consumers have less money to spend due to a fiscal anomaly, a fiscal policy development, i.e. tariffs, okay, then the reaction function of the Fed would have to be that of, there has to be accommodation coming from the monetary side, okay? Not restriction. And here's the thing, it's already restricted, okay? If you look at CPI, and here's funny, is we're looking at the ECB thing, there's this massive delta, and I think it explains why the European indexes this year are doing so well in comparison to the US indexes, okay? If you look at the Eurozone, the ECB CPI number, something called the HICCP, the harmonized inflation, called the HICCP, H-I-C-P. Okay. It's the harmonized inflation consumer prices. That's what it's called. That number is 2.2% year over year. Okay. Sounds great. What is interesting about that is they don't use shelter in their calculation. They never have. We do. Our CPI number has shelter. So Bloomberg has a calculation where it looks at our CPI ex shelter. Our CPI number ex shelter is 1.8%. So we are 40 basis points lower on an apples to apples comparison than the Eurozone. However, they have been stepping down their policy rate. Their policy rate over there is known as deposit rate. So they have what they call the deposit rate. Their deposit rate is at 225 basis points. So they're sitting at 225 basis points of deposit rate on a 2.2 HICCP. That's what the, which is basically our Fed funds and our CPI ex shelter. So we're sitting at 4.5% on the upper bound with a 1.8% basically CPI ex shelter, which is the equivalent of the ECB's HICCP. So that tells you there's a lot of room for the Fed to really start to ease and cut. And I think the equity markets are, yeah, they went through their hissy fit in end of March and beginning of April as far as the tariffs are concerned. And listen, it might not be over. This might not be done. Okay. There could be more to come. I mean, we know it was just announced that China is willing to talk about the fentanyl thing, and there's going to be some talks going on here pretty quick with China, and these are very positive developments. But these things can turn on a dime, and anything can happen, especially with Trump in place. But you know, I think in large part the bull ran through the China shop, and there's a big bull's shaped hole in the wall now, and we're kind of looking at it, and now we're kind of getting a good picture of what this is going to look like. So we're not seeing anything. We haven't seen anything really change in a material way in earnings or earnings estimates. If you look at Amazon. Amazon would be obviously affected tremendously by tariffs. Okay, they posted $1.59 a share on $1.37 consensus. It's a 16.5% upside surprise. Okay, 62% higher than a year ago earnings. Okay, that's just sound. Microsoft, you know, $3.46 a share on $3.22 consensus, 17.5% higher than a year ago. Google just absolutely, you know, slapped everybody around. I mean, $2.81 a share on $2.02 consensus, almost a 40% upside surprise, 50% over a year ago. And they have a lot of international exposure. Okay. So we're not seeing the issues. I understand these are first quarter earnings. These are pre-tariff earnings. Okay. So where are we at as far as estimates for 2025 and 2026? 2025 and 2026. In fact, 2026, both 2025 and 2026 numbers, as I looked at them this morning, they're in the first time in probably, I don't know, 3 months, I've seen revisions tick up, albeit so slightly, but it did tick up. In fact, the beginning of this month, S&P earnings for 2026 were right at $300. I mean, $300.02 a share. And that had come down from most of last year, lived in the 310 range. Okay. There was a single outlier month of July where it spiked up to 317, but I don't really trust that. I think that had a lot to do with like an AI pop, right, that was happening last year. But for the most part, it was 309, 308, 310, 311, right through there. Okay. So where is it now? It's at $300.31. So it's up 29 cents this month. But what it's not doing is it's not continuing to deteriorate. It's not contracting. And if you take last year as a whole at $309 a share and we're at 300 now, we're down, you know, what, 3% total? And that's now starting to tick back up. And again, if you take Tesla away from that, it looks a little bit better. So we're not seeing any material deterioration. So if we see a 2 or 3% deterioration in earnings, But we're also seeing, you know, the surprise index very, very high, which is very, very high right now. We're starting to see great earnings and good upside surprises. Well, that goes to tell you that, well, maybe things aren't so bad in Mudville.
Yeah. Well, and you closed out your newsletter, actually. You mentioned what you just talked about right there with earnings. I mean, the expectation, the fears, that has brought down the multiple. We talked about this on the last show, right? There's been multiple contraction, but the earnings themselves have been sound. Again, we don't know what second quarter is going to look like necessarily. But you closed your newsletter out. I love this. We've talked about it a few shows ago. The quote from
Rudyard Kipling. Yes.
If the poem is, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs. Let's close the show out. Tell why did you close the newsletter out that way? We'll close the show out that way. Because I love that poem. I love that line. I think it's so important. It's so applicable in the market that we've been in for the last couple of months.
Well, I think it's important for clients and maybe other advisors that listen to this show to understand what a good advisor or portfolio manager, money manager is there for. They're obviously there for several reasons. One reason, of course, is to do the work, build the portfolios that are designed for the long term, if that's your objective, and we'll see their way through these temporary exogenous events that are never, ever permanent. Okay. Two, and I think equally as important, if not more important, is for your, and this is particularly for your advisor, our firm is a little different in what we actually manage the money here, and we are the advisor. So where the advisor stands between the client's emotions and their money so that they don't make a poor decision. And that poem from Kipling, and it reads, if one of the lines is, if you can keep your head when all about you are losing theirs, you know, that's, you can only do that if you know where the portfolio, how the portfolio positioned, but why the portfolio is positioned, how it's positioned, and have had the experience and the scars and the stripes to know that we will see our way through this. Okay. That's our job. You know, if you can, and other parts of that poem, which are pretty poignant, if you can think, but not make thoughts your aim, people tend to kind of start to live in their own heads. And it's really easy to do, especially in times of market turmoil, because that leads us to the kind of one of the latter lines in the newsletter in regards to that poem. If you can meet with triumph and disaster and treat those two imposters just the same, yours is the earth and everything that's in it. So if you can think but not make thoughts your aim, then you understand that if you're overthinking and you're not really losing money, triumph and disaster, imposters. So people, clients, whomever, they're likely, if they didn't make any poor, irrational decisions, their balances at the close of market today will be significantly higher or higher than they were on April the 8th. Okay. So if you didn't overthink it and you didn't let your emotions take it over, what happened on April 8th was that imposter. That was an imposter. Okay. Now, do we know, is today an imposter? Is this recovery an imposter? Time will tell. I don't believe it is. Okay. I believe we're headed back to all-time highs. I'm still living with my tale of two markets this year. I think we're going to have a 62-50 year end of this year, unless there is an animal spirits that come in, which I got to tell you, this is 50-50 for me. This is 50-50. Trump does have the power and the ability and the history of bringing the animal spirits into this market, okay, where all of a sudden you'll start to see earnings revisions up and you'll start to see multiples expand. And we could have that 7,000-7,200 year. Right? I just don't see a lot of the middle ground happening. I know that sounds strange. It's the easy thing to say is, well, 6,400 or 6,500, and it could end up there. I have no idea. What matters, and the only utility that is provided by having these targets is directionally, where are we going? right? Directionally, we are heading up, I believe, back to where we were, okay? The market seems to have recovered. The market seems to be in a much better place. And again, for the long term, and if you're positioned properly, you know, it doesn't really matter because, you know, this too shall pass. And it appears that it has.
Yeah. Well, always appreciate your insights, brother. And, you know, I mean, you said the market was a little bit stretched. You felt like we were talking about the banjo string in January, February. I think you even called for a little miniature pullback, and we had to wait a little while for it, but then it happened. And then you boldly called a bottom on April 4th, and you missed that by like 2 days. It ended up being April 8th, two trading days. So, you know, at this point, I'm just like, I enjoy every time you say something, I just wait to hopefully enjoy seeing it come to fruition, come to pass, hopefully in the very near future. So, always appreciate it for listeners, viewers. If you would like to meet with, obviously, as always, the Intelligent Investment Show or the Intelligent Investment Live quarterly webinars are for entertainment purposes only. Not here to tell you what to do with your money, but if you would like to chat with Matt or any of his team, you can give him a call at 702-655-8300. Very friendly staff. I've spoken with them multiple times this week as we've gotten all these things lined up for get approved through compliance and whatnot. So you can also visit intelligentinvestment.com and always invite you to join us back here live every other Friday. Typically, we're a little bit off sequence right now, but every other Friday on the Wealth Partners YouTube channel for the Intelligent Investment Live podcast/webinar, depending on the day. Next week, I'll be back in a polo where I'm most comfortable and can breathe normally. But always a pleasure to see you, Matt. I don't know what the stubble was you were talking about before we recorded. I can't really see it on the camera. So you said your wife liked the stubble. So you look good from my side, though.
It's hard to see. It's mostly gray now. And the beginning of February, it was all brown.
Wow. Yeah, that'll do it.
Been a rough quarter.
So is this at some point. All right, Matt, enjoy the man. See you next time.
All right, see you soon.
See you, bye. As always, the Intelligent Investment Show is for your entertainment, education, and general amusement purposes only. It is not intended to be financial advice or investment advice of any kind. Neither Matt nor I or any of our companies or associated entities know anything about your financial circumstances, so it would be unwise for us to tell you what to do with your money. We encourage you to seek a professional if you do have questions about your portfolio or your financial plans. If you would like to reach Matt and his team, you may do so by giving him a call at 702-655-8300 or visiting intelligentinvestment.com. We thank you for joining us. We'll see you next time. Discussions in the Intelligent Investment Show are for educational purposes only. The information presented should not be considered specific investment advice or a recommendation to take any particular course of action. Always consult with a financial professional regarding your personal situation before making investment or financial decisions. The views and opinions expressed are based on current economic and market conditions and are subject to change. There is no guarantee that any statements of future expectations will come to fruition. All investing involves risk, including the potential for loss of principal. Securities offered through United Planners Financial Services, member FINRA, SIPC. Advisory services offered through American Retirement Planning Group, ARPG, and United Planners are independent companies. Garrett Lill and Wealth Partners are not affiliated with ARPG or United Planners. Any endorsement that I may have given during this recording, it is important to note that I am not a client of ARPG. The views expressed should not be considered representative in any way of my past, present, or future experience with Matt or ARPG. No incentives have been provided to me in connection with any endorsements I may have given on the Intelligent Investment Show. Investing involves risks, and there is no guarantee of any future results, performance, or success.